Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. A swift and deadly maelstrom is the true story of a horrible tragedy born out of ignorance and complacency. It's also the story of life-saving heroics of the efforts of two young men suddenly trapped in ensuing floodwaters to rescue three very young children, those who would tragically lose their mother in the disaster. It's also the fascinating account of how this family would pull itself back together, how the children's father and one of that evening's heroes would subsequently and slowly fall apart emotionally and physically over his lifetime. Thomas Moody Jr. is one of the young children who experienced the Great Norwich Flood firsthand, who tragically lost his mother that horrific evening of March 6, 1963. In his book, he provides for the first time the revealing history of this catastrophic event. Thomas R. Moody Jr., author of A Swift and Deadly Maelstrom, The Great Norwich Flood of 1963, A Survivor's Story, is with us on This Week in America. Tom, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Rick. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
It is our pleasure. And let's go back. First of all, I will reemphasize, this is a true story. This is Tom's story that we'll be talking about on the program today. Let's go back to that winter, 1962-63 in Norwich, Connecticut. By even New England standards, that was an unbearable winter, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what was the telling story with this 100-year-old dam. It had rained, it had snowed, and any picture in your mind that you might have of this dam, you can envision Spalding Pond held millions of gallons of water, and it had a 2-foot-thick ice covering on it, and that was the ultimate end of this dam. It had seeped many times before, but at this point, because of the vast precipitation and the ice blanket on it, the pressure on the dam face that particular evening was the true end of the dam that night.
And that evening was March the 6th, 1963, talking about the Spalding Pond in Mohegan Park. And the day before, it rained like 1.7 inches. So you've got all of that.
Yep.
Talk about what three rivers converge to make up the town. So you had water all around you there, basically.
Yeah, Norwich, colloquially, is kind of known as the town of three rivers. The Shetucket River the other river formed the Thames River. And if you look at Norwich, and I have a little map in the book, those rivers converge to form the Thames River. And Norwich is 12 miles north and southeast of Connecticut of Long Island Sound. And that made the town an industrial giant in the 1800s because ships and exporting was a very big thing for that town. It was a textile giant in the 1800s because ships were able to come into Long Island Sound, up the Thames River, and bring their product not only to New York and Boston, but also to Europe. And so it was a very booming town for a long time because of the vast waterways.
And it's very helpful because you do have the maps in the book. The book is A Swift and Deadly Maelstrom, The Great Norwich Flood of 1963, A Survivor's Story. Tom Moody, Thomas R. Moody Jr., the author and our guest. The book's available, of course, at Amazon. You can link on to all that information at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. A small leak was discovered that afternoon of March the 6th, and basically what these leaks, the seepages, they were quite common. The word went to the public works director. He did an inspection and wasn't too concerned about this.
No, it's interesting. The original leak was discovered 4:30 that afternoon. The public works department was, because of the rain and precipitation that day, the public works department was clearing the waterway around it of trees and everything else, and a gentleman named Monroe Silly, who was a public works foreman that day. They came back to the dam at 4:30 that afternoon. He noticed seepage on the upper eastern side of the dam. His coworker he sent down to the bottom of the dam to open a relief valve to relieve pressure on the face of the dam. He also called his foreman, who was at the Public Works City Garage, 2 or 3 miles away. The foreman actually came up, looked at it, and I quoted in the book, and he said, "Well, it seeped before. It was only about a 5-inch gap." At the same time, the Public Works director, who had been out of town that day, he returned to town, went to the Public Works garage to get an update on. In addition to the dam leakage, obviously, the major concern with the Public Works foreman was flooding in town. There were floods everywhere, as you would expect with a lot of rain. Well, he finally made his way to the dam at around 6:30 that evening. And, of course, it was dark. It was March, so it was still, quote-unquote, winter. He got out there. There was snow on the surface. Kind of slid down there with his flashlight. He looked at it. He determined that, you know, it was seepage that they had seen before. And keep in mind, this dam was, again, over 100 years old. And because of the negligence, there were bushes and trees and everything growing into an earthen dam, which, you know, now you would think, well, that would make the dam integrity very weak.
Yes.
Well, they didn't think of that back then. And so seepage was a fairly normal thing. And so he actually went home to have dinner with the idea that he was going to come back into town and look at the flooding and everything else. And that's what he did. And they all just ignored it. The public workers, because of the leakage, they were downstream. There was a duck pond and everything that was overflowing, and there was a little road downstream, and they were blocking it off so that no one would drive on it, because it was flooding over. And, you know, you think about this, and it's like, you know, all these symptoms are adding up, and nobody was overly concerned. And it was fascinating to think about, if it wasn't for the disaster that was to come.
Yeah, what followed, and I said ignorance and complacency in the beginning, yeah, and that probably sums it up. They felt that we've seen this before. This time it was drastically different. Let's go to your home, 55 Lake Street. Everything was calm and routine that night. Talk about your family, mom, dad, siblings, and then that knock on the window at 9:45 that literally changed your life forever.
Yeah, it was 9:45 that night. My father had just gotten home. He was working a split shift at the American Optical Company. They made safety glasses. That was an outlet of the major glasses company. He had gotten home. My mother was there before I got. One of the more profound things about this was March 6th. My birthday, my fourth birthday, was March 2nd, and this is a true story that came down through my family. My mother was making my birthday cake that day, and my grandmother, who ultimately raised us, was there that evening, and it was one of these stark images. My mother, as she was pulling the cake out of the oven, she suddenly stood up straight and looked at my grandmother, and said, "If anything ever happens to my children, I want you to take care of my kids. I don't want my kids to be broken up among the other family members," which was a very stark sidelike to this story.
Well, yeah, your mother was very young. I mean, there wasn't any reason
24.
To think something was going to, you know, dramatically happen to her, which, of course, ended up being the case. So you get the knock on the window, basically the dam burst, and your parents spring into action. What happened? Yep. What happened after that?
Well, what happened was, as it turned out, it was a teenager that was sent out by the public works director as the story was unfolding elsewhere. So my father went to the window to see what was going on. The kid took off, obviously, to warn others. He saw water coming down the road, and that, of course, gave him pause. And so he immediately told my mother to call her mother, saying, okay, we're on our way because something's going on here. So she got myself and my two brothers out of bed and got us ready and got us loaded into the car. Living above us was the Orsini family. And young Tony Orsini, he was 19 years old, a family friend. It was actually their house that we were renting. He volunteered to come with us to help us. Again, he was 19 years old. He had just gotten home from playing a City League basketball game. So we get in the car. I'm in the back seat with Tony, and my mother and my two brothers are in the front seat. So we start down Lake Street, and the dynamic of the road is the road goes straight down and then curves at the bottom. And it was pure timing because, as I learned in my research, that a young teenager probably 5 seconds before us made the same route, went down the road, made the turn, made another turn to go down into the town, and got away without any issue. We went down, made the turn, and just to our left was the Lake Street Playground. And at that point, the flood flow hit us full force. It was just at that point where the flood flow had made it through the Lake Street Playground and hit us broadside and knocked our car over. And again, the dynamic of the terrain at that point, there was a huge drop off to our right, flipped our car over the drop off, turned our car over, turned us around again. And now we're talking two life-saving parts of the land that saved us. And otherwise we would have been washed away. First, it was a garage roof abutted against that drop off. There was a car dealership at the bottom, Lamparell's car dealership, and a garage roof where cars were stored under was abutted against it. So our car, even though it got turned around, was abutted against it. And so our car is upside down. My father and Tony got out on this roof. My mother was inside. She's handing us out to get on this roof. But when she handed my youngest brother, Sean, out, the dynamic in the car now shifted with the flow.
Yes.
And she actually had her hand gripped onto my father's. But unfortunately, with the car shift, and, you know, her hand was muddy, my father's hand was muddy and wet and everything, she lost a grip. And again, I speculate in the book because I'm not entirely sure how she passed away, but the flood flow got her and she went under. And I'm convinced that she was strong enough to get back up, and I'm convinced she got hit by something. It knocked her unconscious and she ultimately drowned. And the other profound part of it is, so my father and Tony and my two brothers and I are standing on this roof. My father was absolutely ready to jump in after her. And the other fortunate part of it was Tony grabbed him by the shoulders and said, his name is Thomas Ronald Moody Sr. And everybody called him Ronnie. And Tony grabbed him and said, Ronnie, she's gone. Because he was ready to go. He was ready to go in after her, and God only knows what would have happened had he done that.
That is one of the more emotional chapters in a very emotional book. The book is a swift and deadly maelstrom, the Great Norwich Flood of 1963, a survivor's story. Thomas R. Moody Jr., our guest, it's a true story. He was in the car, and boy, it has to be so difficult, and I can tell it is even years later to go back and to tell that story. I mentioned in the beginning, your father really struggled with that. Talk about that. That was something that really haunted him for the rest of his life, wasn't it?
He was never the same afterward. After we were rescued, we got off that roof and got up in a tree We were in a tree which was right next to that roof for over an hour. The roof collapsed as soon as we got up in that tree, or we would have been washed away. Once we got out of that tree, obviously the kids went to the hospital. He got out of that tree, immediately went out there as the water trickled away, tried to look for my mother. The next day, he and his brothers, along with my mother's brothers, went out to look for her. He went to the hospital, obviously, and got treated. One of the more profound pictures, and he told me this, when they told him that she'd been found, my uncle Jerry actually found her, probably, I think it was about 50 feet away from where the car was overturned under a pile of rubble. He walked up McKinley Avenue near one of the World War II armories and just sat on the sidewalk with his face in his hands. So it was very difficult for him. And then afterward, when we were growing up, we ended up in low-income housing on the west side of town. And we were there by virtue of living with my grandmother, because he couldn't live with us because his income was such that it was too high for him, even though it wasn't a very good job at all. It was too high for him, yes, to live with us. So he had to come and visit us. But because he lived on his own, he started drinking and he aged. If you ever saw him when he was 40, he looked like he was almost 60. And you know, it just emotionally, he just never was the same.
It's a story of heroes, your parents included in there, and there, yeah, were others I know in the community as well. This really sort of defined the community, at least during that time frame, hasn't it?
It did, and that's an excellent point, because the effort afterward and the help that the town of Norwich got immediately afterward, there are so many stories of how the neighboring towns pulled together. The Norwich Bulletin newspaper is a great example. They were right in the middle of the flood path, and they were in danger of not being able to publish a newspaper. And the New London Day, New London, Connecticut, is 12 miles south. Their cooperation in helping the Norwich Bulletin publish the next day's newspaper. And if you look at the Norwich Bulletin newspaper from the next day, it's offset in its printing, because they had to use the New London Day's printing press. And so that cooperation was amazing. The Coast Guard, the Coast Guard Academy is in New London. They came up and helped with initial cleanup, bulldozing. They had, you know, just imagine in this flood path, there was mud and water and everything. So they initially had to bulldoze the streets to get rid of all the mud and everything. Basements were flooded. There were areas in town and low-lying areas where water from the pond was settled, but it was still deep enough. There were fish, well, you know, swimming around in these puddles that came from the dam, you know, 2 miles away. Yes. And so all this had to be cleaned up, and it was amazing. High school kids from the local high school came out to volunteer to help with the cleanup. It was really an amazing effort to get the town back to normal.
And in the book, you talk about the aftermath, the trial, the settlement, how the people were treated, yeah, the families of the six who died in this, the litigation that followed. It's all in the book, and just a minute or so left, as we're seeing so many areas being flooded now. What's that like when you watch the news and you've lived through that. That has to bring back memories when you see what, and this is a good story for people because we're still dealing with these issues in many parts of the country.
Sure. And yeah, the trial, and I mean, it was a two-edged sword, because if they had sued the city for, you know, the pain and suffering that was really due, it would have broken the city. So the litigators who practiced and lived in the town, had they gone after the amount of money that they really should have gone after, the town would have been broke. I mean, the town would have been broke to this day. So they had to go after sort of a fair, quote unquote, fair settlement. Yes. Well, that left everybody feeling like, okay, we didn't really get a fair settlement. I have to say that had this happened today, and given the way the media is today, you know, like you mentioned, you see these kinds of disasters and the kinds of payouts and everything. I'd have to say that the outcome for my father, at least, and would have been a lot different. But it's still, you know, the bottom line, Rick, is you know, we lost our mother, and we had to grow up without our mother. My view is, you know, the money outcome doesn't replace her. It doesn't replace what happened to my father emotionally. So, you know, be that as it may, the pain and suffering component of that whole part of it, it just doesn't add up. You know, it happened. It was negligence. Unfortunately, and if you read in the book, I go into great detail on my views on the negligence part of it. I don't blame the city of Norwich because it was a dam that they inherited. It was built long before the city ever got it, and they inherited something that they just didn't know anything about. The state of Connecticut did not enforce any periodicity of dam maintenance. And it was just a total unfortunate event that unfortunately we got caught up in, and it was just that.
It is a riveting book, a true story, A Swift and Deadly Maelstrom, The Great Norwich Flood of 1963, A Survivor's Story. The author is Thomas R. Moody, Jr. The book is available at Amazon.com. You can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and get all the information on the book and information on how to order the book as well. Tom, a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing this story. It's an excellent job. The first time anyone's revealed the true events of this tragic event back in 1963. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Rick, thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity for myself and for my family. And again, thank you so much.
It's our pleasure to help you talk about this event and spread the word of the tragedy of 1963. The book, again, A Sweet and Deadly Maelstrom, A Swift and Deadly Maelstrom. The book is available at Amazon. Information, of course, at our website, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.